No doubt we will finish the 12th chapter and the remainder of the book of Ecclesiastes this evening, and then we may actually finish the 122nd Psalm as well. So we'll have to see how far we go in both of these studies. Dee sent me an email on the subject of grave statistics. Researchers continue to come up with increasingly grave statistics that explain how serious the condition is among Christian adults. Now, it will become rather obvious why these things are being read, I think, in a moment, in light of what we're going to be looking at here in Ecclesiastes. 64% of Christian adults. I want to preface this by saying that these are professing Christian adults, okay? Because when Barna does his research, one of my peeves against Barna is he has a tendency to categorize everyone who claims to be a believer as believers, even though I know he knows that it's not possible that all of these people making these outrageous statements are believers. It's just not possible. So he needs to be more specific in that. And he may say, well, I don't want to be judgmental, to which I would say, well, let me be then, because it's ridiculous to attribute Christianity to these people. So I like to say among professing Christian adults, 64% believe moral truth depends on the situation. So this what we call way back many years ago, situational ethics, where the ethics depended upon the circumstance, not upon a set of standard rules and principles of life. The situation determined what was right or wrong, not necessarily a set of moral standards, i.e. the scriptures. 60% believe male and female cohabitation outside of marriage is acceptable. Yeah, to the world, but it's not acceptable to the Lord. You got 60% of professing believers saying that it's okay to shack up. Well, I'm sorry, but the 100% of the 60 ain't saved to believe that kind of nonsense. All these things fly right in the face of the scripture. 55% believe a good person can earn his or her salvation. Based upon what? I remember a long time ago, I was talking vehemently against Mother Teresa. Many years ago, and I was taking a task about that. Now, see, somebody should have called me with an apology. I remember this clearly in Garden Grove. I came down on her and the Pope and everybody else and said that there's no way these people can be saved because they don't believe in the biblical Christ. Now, Mother Teresa recently, in her memoirs, in her writings, which she wanted destroyed because she didn't want people to realize the big, fat, juicy hypocrite she was, she denied the faith that she professed. Now, I'm waiting for my phone call. Somebody should call and apologize to me because I said it probably a decade before it happened. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to see that people who have no regeneration in them could possibly live the Christian life. She didn't struggle about her faith. She had nothing to struggle with, because if she believed Christ, she wouldn't have said half the things I read, and I read a lot more than what was in that blurb. I was amazed at what this woman actually believed, and she knew she was doing wrong. And the more accolades that were placed upon her, the more she felt her own hypocrisy and her own darkness and emptiness. Big, fat, juicy, demon-filled hypocrites, no surprise. Now, 55% believe that a person like that can earn his or her salvation. Now, I'm telling you, 100% of the 55 aren't saved, because that is diametrically opposed willfully to the Word of God. And 44% believe Jesus Christ committed sins while on earth. No doubt 100% of these 44% are lost. In fact, these numbers continue to increase year after year after year every time Barna takes the research. And consider the peril of college students. Get this. 67% of college professors approve of homosexuality. Frankly, I think that's a low number. I think more of them do than 67%. 84% of professors approve of abortion. I think the number is higher than that too, but even if it wasn't, that's still a horrible statistic. 65% embrace socialist and communist ideals. Now, there is a on the desk right next, I knew if I left, I knew it. Right on my desk, on that desk, right on the left side, there's some papers right there. Would you please bring them to me? I knew it. I said, let me take this back because I don't think I'm going to need these. It never, ever fails. Now, see, people kind of come on me because I talk about things relative to the government, things that are important, I believe, to our society and to really the demolition of our country as a whole. Now, you have 65% of people who embrace, thank you, brother, socialist and communist ideals. I want you to listen to a quotation from a movie, actually from a movie series that was on television many years ago. And you'll probably never find it again because it bombed when it was on television. I thought it was quite intriguing. That was the program called America, A-M-E-R-I-K-A. I think it was a 14-hour miniseries on Channel 7. And though it looked kind of campy, they were gutsy enough to put this on the air. And I ran across just some quotations from that movie. And one just struck me in the light of our own dumbed-down society today. I want you to listen carefully about this because this is important in regards to the fact that college students have all of these socialist and communist ideals drilled into their mind, and their actions betray the fact that this is the direction where our country is going. Listen to this. He says, totalitarianism does not need armies. It only needs to control a couple of things: the ability to disperse privilege to some and to withhold it from others. Of course, divided people helps. That's the end of the quote. That's it. It doesn't need to really do much. It just needs to have the kind of control that is necessary to, well, really to just get what it wants. And I'll define the word totalitarianism according to the dictionary. Now listen to this. And I don't know if you really think about a lot of things that are happening in your culture, but I do, because they're happening whether we think about them or not. But I choose to use the brain that God gave me. Totalitarianism is a form of government together with its accompanying ideology. It is characteristic of the 20th century. Remember this. Totalitarianism occurred in countries in which social conflicts related to the current situation and aversion to democracy and or capitalism led to the success of an ideology promising the end of all injustice. A totalitarian regime combines characteristics of autocracy and dictatorship. It is actually their extreme form, or even as one may say, its degeneration. A totalitarian state exerts control over its citizens that is much greater than in any other earlier forms of government. The goal is to subordinate the whole society to the state or the party, using information, monopoly, propaganda, controlling all aspects of individual life, official, and all-encompassing state ideology, repression system of the secret police, and the rule of a single party. That's what's happening in the United States of America. Exactly. We are headed towards that system, that way of thinking. And that's what college students are being trained. They're being trained to think that way. And as long as people are divided, and as I said a few weeks ago, there's just this massive movement of bitterness and hatred and anger from all walks of life. It's just there. And if people don't see it, well, you're too busy being stupid and dumbed down. Listen to this. 88% of students from Christian homes deny their faith before they graduate from college. 88%? 100 out of the 88% of those students were never born again. which he says many of the 88% that are denying their faith before they graduate from college never return because they were never truly saved. They are false converts. Well, I'm thinking, you know, how many of the 88 according to Barna? How many? And not only how many, but what happened to the others? It doesn't really matter. They're all that way. You can't say, well, maybe 35%, maybe 67%, you know, maybe 80%, but the 8% that, you know, they're okay. Really? I don't think so. 91%. This is the thing that really got me. 91% of students from evangelical churches do not believe in absolute moral truth. 91%. This Bible is absolute truth. And according to Barna, and this is a quantum leap from the last couple of surveys, 91% of students from evangelical churches do not believe in absolute truth. And I'll tell you one of the reasons why. Because the evangelical church for years has turned the church into a circus where the young people that they train, it's all fun and games and frivolity and stupidity. There's nothing serious about the Christian life. As I said in the Timothy series, in 1 Timothy, Christianity is not fun. It was never projected as fun by the apostles. It was never this circus mentality given by the apostles. We see it all over the place today. And this proves what I've said, many, many years ago. Of course, I was scandalized and scorned for that too. But, you know, I'm a patient man. In time, it will always come back to bless me. Donut Man and Veggie Tales and Bible Man. Name some others. There's plenty of McGee and Me, plenty of these so-called Christian kid programs. They haven't helped nobody. David and Goliath and all these other programs have been around for decades, have miserably failed when you have 91% of the students who have been growing up under this nonsense to go into a college that can't even defend their faith. Our methods have failed. The vacation Bible schools have failed because it's all about making kids and forcing kids to believe something they don't believe. We're just trying to get that magical profession. All these pictures and cartoons and puppet shows and bus ministries and all this stuff we've used for years and years and years and swore up and down the sideways that God was using and that God is in it. Well, here's the evidence. And this is just one huge evidence that none of that worked. And we have these kids going to our, and frankly, it should say something about our own schools. Some of these kids go from four-year college, Christian college, to graduate school. Many lose their faith there too. What are they getting? I tell you what they're getting. They're getting watered down, washed up, detergentized, sanitized truth. Not straight truth. Because they don't want straight truth. They don't want it. They don't want it. And the church won't give it to them. We're happy if our program works, not whether somebody is actually saved or not. Most students say they do not. Listen to this. I've been saying this forever. I will always wait. I don't care how many years it will take. I will be vindicated. I got a lot of phone calls I'm waiting on. Whole lot of them. Folks should be saying, you know what, Pastor, you're right. I just say, you know what, you should have listened. But y'all know everything because y'all grown. Listen to this. I've been saying this forever. Most students say they did not learn enough Bible content growing up to enable them to make biblical life decisions, let alone defend essential Christian doctrines in the face of vicious opposition. You can't donut man these kids to Jesus and through life. Life ain't about a bunch of donuts and a hole in the middle of a donut. Life isn't about McGee and Me. Life isn't about Bible Man and fantasy and cartoons. It's about life, and life stinks and life hurts. And kids grow up just totally treated them ignorant of reality from a biblical perspective. And they can't handle themselves 5 inches from that door on their own. And a lot of it is their own fault, because they're not taking in their own minds and hearts things they've been trained. Because I'm certain that a lot of these homes, that the parents did a great job of raising their children. I'm not going to say that out of all the 91%, you know, that all the 91% of the parents. Listen, I know what I'm talking about. And I've talked to many of these people, and I know what I'm talking about from experience. Okay, you have to put some responsibility, if not most, on the necks of these stubborn, hard-headed children that think they know everything because they're grown. They ain't grown because they ain't listening to folks who are grown. They think they know everything. You set them out one day. You know, they won't even do, because they know they get busted. Put them out one day in the world. Just one day. A couple of hours by themselves. See if they can handle life. They'd be scratching that door down trying to get back in that house. But they so doggone grown, they know everything. They don't know what they need to know. Why all that? Why did you read all that? What is the purpose? Go to the 11th chapter of Ecclesiastes. Because all these youngsters so doggone grown, they know everything. They realize they don't know anything. I mean, people were offended. One man, I remember vividly, he came to the church. We were in Anaheim. And, oh, I love you, Pastor Howard, and blah, blah, blah. And had all kinds of flags going up in my head. Watch this guy. He ain't right. There's too much. I said, no. I said, watch him. Watch when he get popped with that truth. Oh, he got popped. He was mad. I said, y'all young people don't know anything. You're stupid. Oh, you know, his whole pet peeve was about how we should respect our youth, and they're trying and all that. Man, please. Please. I don't know what you thought what you came to hear, but you know, you had wrong expectations coming to hear me, because I never, and you know, the one thing I'd never really told many people, the kids respected me because I told them the truth. One lady brought her kid in. I can't get this boy to do nothing. And he wants to have stuff. He want to have his tongue pierced and all that and this stuff and that. And then I said, what about the husband? He couldn't talk to me, the blah, blah, blah. I said, so I told Miss that and the other. I said, come here, son. In 5 minutes, he went to his mother and said, I don't want to have my tongue pierced. 5 minutes. 5 minutes. What she couldn't do all his life, it took me 5 minutes. The kids respect you when you tell them the truth. They may not like you. They may despise you. But when I got that call from that kid, was it yesterday or the day before yesterday? Day before yesterday. He was one of them stubborn. I know what I'm. Go ahead, stubborn. Going out to life, beat the living daylights out of him. His whole family disintegrated. Why? Because you cannot play with God. You're not going to get up there and beat God. I tell people the biggest mistake you'll ever make in your life is coming to the door jam of this ministry, because you're going to be super accountable. Why say all that? Rejoice, verse 9, O young man, in thy youth. Let thy heart cheer thee in the days of thy youth. We closed with this last week. Walk in the ways of thine heart. In the sight of thine eyes. See, that's what they do all the time. You teach them, you train them, you warn them, but they're going to do just like this. I'm free now. I'm free from the restraints of my parents and that dogmatic big black preacher. I'm free as a bird. I'm free to do my thing. They can't wait to get out there now. Can't wait to leave that oppressed life of their parents' rule. And they can't even balance a checkbook and can't even count money when they go to the store, but they so quick to want to get out the house. They can't clean their room. What makes they going to be able to take care of an apartment? And what they going to do with some fool come banging at the door, calling daddy? Daddy ain't there. No, we grown. We like this. Just rejoice in thy youth. Let thy heart cheer thee all the days of thy youth. You're young and happy. Oh, so happy. I'm free. walk in the ways of thine heart. Whatever your heart tells you to do, just do it, because you're free and young and you have the power and the strength to do it. And in the sight of thine eyes, whatever your eyes see, whatever lust and desires you want to accumulate, go for it. Why? Because you're free. I'm 18. I'm grown. Okay, 18 grown. But know thou that for all these things, God will bring thee into judgment. Oh, yeah, you're going to be judged. Live free. Despise all the love that your parents gave you. Go and head out there and do it. You watch. And see, for many kids, when they hit that uh-oh in life, and an oh my gosh in life, and yow in life, they didn't want to come slithering back home. The environment ain't back there anymore for them. They had it when it was there. You see, many of them lose the privilege they had once they get out there and get free, because they show God they didn't care what God gave them in the first place. So what, they think that suddenly they could just turn around, walking away of their own mind and heart? Like, well, you know, I can always go back home. No, you can't always go back home. Maybe that door don't close for you. You know, maybe your parents go, I'm sick of you being grown. You grown? Here's your bag. Here's $30 spending money, grown. Go ahead, get you a job. You so grown? I packed this for you. Go ahead, grown. Get on out of here. I'm about to go on. But think this. Don't think this is a revolving door. You can come back all the time. You come back with some baby. Don't think you can come back here. This ain't no nursery. You grown. You ain't got no husband. Didn't invite us to the wedding. You grown. Do what you want to do. See, I ain't going to be bamboozled. Harley Howard is accountable for Harley Howard. I'm not going to be bamboozled. If somebody mistreat me after I treat them with love, you can kiss them goodbye. Once they're out of my presence, bye. Goodbye. I ain't going to play the hypocrite game. Oh, we just let bygones be bygones. That's not biblical. Goodbye. You want to be grown? Let the world beat your behind up. Because you show God nothing that he has privileged you to have, you cared about. But know thou that for all these things, for all your rejoicing in your youth, for all of the walking in the ways of your heart and in the sight of your eyes, you will be held in judgment. You will be giving an account to God for it. Therefore, remove sorrow from thine heart and put away evil from thy flesh. For childhood and vanity, childhood and youth are vain. Sorrow. What do you think comes from all this just indulging according to the desires of your life? Sorrow of the heart. How many people have left their homes, left good homes, and all they experience is sorrow? I'm going to try to get better tomorrow. I'm going to get over tomorrow. They don't. They just keep compounding sorrow after sorrow after sorrow. Then they pass it to the next generation of people. Their own families and others as well. This is reality. Folks are living in fantasy. Remove sorrow from your heart. All the lust of your heart and eyes, it just produces sorrow. Or it produces a momentary pleasure, but it's short-lived at best. Put away evil from your flesh, for childhood and youth are vanity. All the impulses and the strength of youth, the darkness of the hair, the joys of experiencing life, the newness of youth with all of its joys and sorrows and fun and frustration is nothing but vanity. And it is empty and it is useless if lived without a relationship with God. And I know that all too well. It's all vain. It'll take you right into the cycle of death. You won't even care. You won't even care how you live. There are people who don't even care how they live. They've been given over to their sin. Don't even care how they live. Don't even care if they live or die. Why? Well, they didn't listen. They grown. They didn't need the Lord. I'm going to go to college, become an engineer. Yeah, an atheist engineer. He go into the naive and knew the Lord so you can get that boy. Because he don't want no part of Christ. He don't want no part of you either. He just want certain parts of you, but he don't want you. He go to his friends and brag about how he got hold of you. Or vice versa, for that matter. But then you grow. You know everything. You know nothing. A big, stupid fool to think that you can outsmart God and the blessings and the privileges that God has given you. A big, big time fool. And there are a lot of them out there. A lot of them that are in this statistic. It's not just the parents' fault. And in many cases, or some, it's not even the church's fault. I think we did a pretty good job. In fact, I know I did as a pastor. And the people I had under me, well, let's just stick with the first one. Of teaching children. I've had the privilege of teaching classes of children. I had four or five teachers before I came in there. And when I went in there, the attendance doubled. I didn't do anything but teach the same Bible I teach y'all. They said, one church in Compton, I came in there, became the superintendent. They said, what class you want to teach? I said, I want to teach these young kids. You want to teach your adult class? No. I want to teach these. And they came in, it's like, uh-oh, what's he going to? I'm going to be real with you. I tell them, I'll be for real with you, according to this Bible. I never had an absentee in that class, as long as I was at the church, not one time. Attendance in that class doubled. They were bringing their friends to church, and I didn't ask them to do it. We had a great time, and they were pouring out their hearts and saying things they wouldn't tell their parents. I was like, wow, God be glorified. Kid will respect you if a kid with a brain will respect you if you're straight with them. If you lie to them, they will never respect you. But if you're straight with them, they'll respect you. Now Solomon gives the only true solution to a life of vanity, whether the person is old or young, and the solution begins in this 12th chapter. Actually, the prelude is in these 9th and 10th verses of chapter 11. And so he tells all these wonderful young people who are so grown and so prone to live like they know everything and living according to the lust of their flesh and eyes and their pride of life because of their youth and vigor and strength and blah, blah, blah. He says, remember now thy Creator in the days of your youth. Stop there. He didn't say wait till you get 80 and then get saved. You done built up a whole bunch of resistance towards God. And see, when you're young, you have a tendency to think stupid thoughts. Here's the mind thinking. I'm going to not go to, be a Christian until I'm 80 years old. All I got to do then, is just confess Christ as Savior, and I'm going to be in. Now, you thought that, and you thought you were hiding it from God. Now, he knew that before the world began, before the foundation of the world began. Don't you think he knows that? You think you're going to hide something from God? I'm going to live my life until I'm broke down. And after that, I'm going to go ahead and give my life to the church. Yeah, that's it. Wrong answer. All these stupid thoughts come into the minds of youth. They think they're getting by with something. Stupid morons. I'm getting tired of you calling me stupid. Well, stop acting like a fool. What did you come out in the wilderness to see? What did you think you came to hear? Some lying prophet? You came from them places. Remember now thy Creator. Remember your Creator. Your Creator. The Creator of you individually. Oh, God created the planets. He created you too. One of the lies of the church again is that God created the planets, but man evolved. Wrong answer. Remember now. Not later. I don't think we're going to get finished with. I'm trying so hard to get finished with this book. Remember, but I keep seeing this. Remember now. Right now. Thy Creator in the days of thy youth. While the evil days come not, they're coming. They're coming. Nor the years draw nigh when thou shalt say, oh, I have no pleasure in them. Then what? In your youth, all the vim and vigor, all the doing my thing, I'm big and bad, I'm black and I'm proud, I'm whatever. It's all over. When the time will come, when you'll say, and you're going to say it, I can't do it anymore. I don't enjoy it anymore like I used to enjoy it. I don't have the same desires anymore. It done ran out. Sad. Sad. It's sad. You see these guys running around here with shirts all up and like this and stuff like that. Collars all back here. You know, wearing bell bottoms and stuff. I say, fool, put your shirt on. It's too late for you. It's a sick world. Big old Brillo right there, the chest and all that. That stuff be scary. I mean, man, cover that raccoon up, will you? Nobody needs to see that thing, man. At least comb it, part it or something, but cover it up. Remember and recall the God who made you. Never forget God. We need a continual reminder of our God. Why? Because as the days grow older, the reality of the emptiness and vanity of life begins to set in. It sets in. Especially after your first whatever. I don't even have to fill it in. The first whatever is nothing ever better than your first. And then that's gone. You go through the heartache. That's your first heartbreak. Then here comes the second. And the third. And the 30th. And the 50th. And this experience. And that relationship. And this situation. And that circumstance. It all sets in. You were thinking you had the world on a string. Wrapped up on your finger. And you had a plan. And you had a scheme and a method that no one else tried. How many morons had the same plan you did? You came along with your pride-filled, youthful foolishness, thinking that you're going to conquer this world. And the world says, come on, I eat you fools for breakfast. You're my toothpick. Come on, toothpick. And that plan didn't last 5 seconds out of that door. You met all those people that your parents warned you about, the preacher told you about, when you laughed and smirked and rolled your dumb eyes and, you know, sucked on your gums when you should have been listening with your whole heart. Now you're dealing with those people, but you don't know how to deal with them because you weren't listening when they were telling you how to deal with them. I knew what I got. That's not going to happen to me. Mm-hmm, it happens to you. You get it there and wing it. Where the world experienced how to eat up people like you. But you know everything because you're young and strong and pretty and all that junk. You know, I'm an old man. What does he know? I understand how it is how young people despise older folk because I used to do the same thing. The difference was I was lost. Old fossil don't know nothing. Look at him. I know the mentality because I used to be the mentality. But I was lost then. The first people I gravitated towards when I got saved was them old saints. I got an immediate wake-up call from on high. These young folk are stupid. And I'm part of the stupid crowd. I can't live like this. I got to find me somebody to know what they're talking about. Wisdom gravitated me towards them old folk. And I owe them for being here right now because they spend time with me and I thank God I sent them to be with them. But not today. Everybody's so doggone smart because they're cute. Youth is a vanity because young people have a wrong view of life as well as their own brevity. They don't even think about the fact that, hey, in an instant they could die too. So they don't live for God now. They don't remember now the Creator in the days of their youth because they don't think they're going to die. Oh, nothing's going to happen to me. Stupid. Take a trip to any gravesite, any of them. Usually the first few rows are reserved for young infants and young children, 2, 3, 4, 5, teenagers. All reserved for those who thought and those who couldn't think. nothing would ever happen to me. There are many young people who die, are dying, and will die. But what happens to the young man or woman who may escape death in their youth? Some escape, a lot of escape. Some don't, but a lot do. What happens as they begin to grow older? Some may fulfill all these little fantasies and instantaneous desires and whatnot. Okay, so what happens? They don't think about what's going to happen. They're living for the now. Live for today. Not for what's going to come. What happens? The days of evil come as they do all of mankind. The days of one's death approaches. And then the present years and memories of the past years compounds the agony of a wasted life. You begin to see how wasted your life was. Even if you've experienced all the things that you wanted to, you begin to see as you get older, what a waste. This whole life was nothing but a waste. I could have been living for my Creator and I didn't. So what did I accomplish? Nothing. What happens to a young man or woman who lives life under the sun without God? They all come to the place where life holds no more joy for them. Doesn't? All the joys and freedom of youth meet up with the reality of life. The insurmountable wall of reality just smacks them down, and they try to climb it, and the wall just smacks them down again. Okay, keep trying. I'm going to climb this smack. The wall gets higher, and we are more tired now, and we're trying to wall. Ain't got a smack. It just flick us off. The wall knows we're going down. We're too dumb to think we can overcome these things. You can't. Verse 2, while the sun or the light or the moon or the stars be not darkened, nor the clouds return after. Now from verses 3 through 8, Solomon gives a detailed account of the breakdown of the physical body. That's what all this refers to. No matter how much exercise you do, and I encourage folks to do it. But you know what? I see the 87-year-old man at the gym. You know, he walks like an 87-year-old man. Yes, he does. And he'll go to the dumbbells, lift up 20 pounds. Look, for a guy that old, that's like lift 1,000 when you're young. I'm impressed, but you know what? He walks like an 87-year-old man. Real slow. And I said, you know what? I'm getting wisdom watching this guy. A year ago when I was at the gym, there was an Oriental lady. She's probably in her 60s. Very skinny. Very respectful older lady. And I saw her 2 days ago. And I said, woman, you look good. She's all toned up. But she's about that big. She's still got a little flab, but her arms are toned. It took a long time for her to get that way. But you know what? She's walking slow too. I said, you done got all toned up. You doing it. Good. I was impressed. But you know what? I watched how she walked. They all getting a little slow in the step. Mom Young was here. Oh, she was spry in her youth. But now she done got slow in the step. You know, you can't step like you used to step. You don't have that reaction time like you used to have. And all that's coming your way. Yes, it is. The person you laugh at today, you're going to be that person if you live that long. No matter how much exercise you do, the body will still break down. It's going to break down. That doesn't mean, okay, just live on the couch and live on a recliner and die. I didn't say that. There is no stopping what's going to happen to the body. You might be able to slow it down, but all this, hear me carefully. I'm an advocate for whatever kind of physical training because it's a good thing. Our country used to be a country that worked. When we had in the 40s and the 50s, people went to work. They went to work. They didn't sit in front of a keyboard, and that was their work. They had great strong fingers, but you know, nothing else. People went to work. They went to work. They built factories, and they built buildings, and they drove things, trucks, and they delivered, you know, it was actual labor. Those days are gone pretty much. So now most folks are sedentary. Now, I don't mind, exercise is a wonderful thing. It's a wonderful thing. Nothing wrong with it. In fact, you want to try to live as long as you can because you have a job for the Lord to do. I suggest you do whatever is necessary that your body can stand. But you're not going to stop what's going to happen to the body. That doesn't advocate, vapidity and nothing. Just sit down. I'm not suggesting that at all. If you heard that, well, you're stupid because you weren't listening. You may be able to pump iron at 70, but no amount of physical strength will stop your death. In fact, some people die when they're pumping. And that's it. Now there's a movement to get people to stop pumping iron because it says it kills them. You know why it kills them? Because they're too doggone weak. That's why it kills them. They can't lift 20 pounds because they're not conditioned to lift one. So they go to the gym trying to lift 100 and they die of a heart attack. What are you going to blame the barbell for that? People have been lifting weights since the Stone Age. You can't take a sedentary, lazy, good-for-nothing person and put them in the gym. They haven't lifted up. The heaviest thing lifted up was a television controller and give them 100 pounds of weight. They're going to die. They're not used to that. You got to start them with the two, but they're too proud. And the women looking at me, you better pick up them 2-pounders because you ain't picked up nothing heavier than that. That's, I'm sweating. Six, 7, spotter, 2 pounds of weight. Take all the supplements you will. It will not stop you from the day of your death. I take supplements. I think they've done a wonderful, wonderful thing. But, I don't know when I'm going home to be with the Lord. I might live, outlive everybody. I might not. I'm going to do what I can because I think it's sensible because I believe what I'm doing is essential. As creation has its darkness, so life goes into obscurity. The dark days will approach, and there is nothing that can be done to stop them. Verse 3, in the days when the keepers of the house shall tremble, and the strong men shall bow themselves, and the grinders cease because they are few, and those that look out of the windows be darkened. The thought previous to this was this madness for exercise. And this, it's beyond just health and the normal aspects of being a healthy person. A lot of it is rooted in idolatry. Back when Arnold and the rest of those guys, all this was rooted in idolatry, and it still is. 99% of people in the gym will never look like that. And thank God, because how they got where they were, they're nothing but a walking test tube of all kinds of chemicals and whatnot. Here's Sylvester Stallone running around here all across the universe promoting his worthless movies and saying, well, I got all my physique, through eating the products that I promote and, eating right and lifting weights. Man, I caught in Australia with a whole giant suitcase full of HGH. Injectable human growth hormone. Tell everybody a big, fat, juicy, devil-filled lie. He gets his strength from all this lifting on his own and blah, blah. Just say, man, most of them lie. Most of these men lie. Most of them are nothing but injected. You don't get to look like that if you don't have no chemical in you. You can't be serious to believe that if you took some NO Explode, you suddenly going to look like Lee Haney? You insane. It's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. You're not going to look like the governor. Excuse me, governator. Not going to look like him. The body's going to break down. So this madness, this push, especially in California, is this vanity of trying to beat death. It's vanity. I can beat death. You just watch. You just watch. In the days when the keepers of the house shall tremble. The keepers of the house are the hands and arms. They start to shake, sometimes uncontrollably. We knew, it's like this. He couldn't stop shaking his hands. The keepers were already breaking down. The man was in the mid-youth. He's where Like, man, what's wrong with your hands? There are many people. I watch them on TV. Their arms like this. To them, that's normal. That's the way they do things. And when they try to stop us, they can't help it. The keepers, they start to shake. The strong men are either the shoulders or the legs, depending on how you interpret it. Okay, let's just say that they're both. The strong men. The strength biblically is in the thighs. The big, healthy, muscular thighs and the big shoulders. You can get down there and do that squat. Ah, maybe a sumo. Just get down there. So glad this is audio tonight. Thank God for that. Yeah, Kyo said, yeah, I agree. Get down to the gym and just squat all that weight. Get up. Ah, strong legs. Ah. That's why you got to be at church. It's the fun stuff you don't see. Yeah, they get weak too. Knees get to hurting. Legs get to hurt. Calves get to hurting. You just start walking. Ah, and they just start doing stuff like that, you know. You just walking. You walking just and unannounced. You start getting scared to walk because you don't know what's going to happen. You be careful where you step. It ain't that as you. Ah! They get all cramped up. Shucks. You just don't know. So I fell on the ground one time. I got out the car. I thought it was fine. That leg just, just jammed up. I'm rolling on the ground like I'm on fire. I was glad nobody was around either. I'm sure somebody said, don't go near that. Leave him alone. The grinders are the teeth, which will fall out because they're going to fall out. They're going to come out. Yeah, they're coming out. Listen, brush them and floss them. Do whatever you can. There are a lot of people that live their entire life with their set of teeth. That's wonderful. But there are a whole lot of folk that can't make it. And it's not always their fault. Some people have what's called weak bone structure. Teeth just fall out. They can't help it. Doctors say, we don't know what happens. There's some people that weak skull structure, teeth just fall out. No, nothing, you can't explain it. Well, once you're able to eat steak, now your food has to be soft. You know, able to eat steak, now everything you eat has to be hamburger. It has to be medium rare. Because all that, you know, that rough stuff don't work good with your dentures. You got to eat that medium rare. So it's kind of already mushed for you. You got to eat applesauce, not apples. And you can't eat apples. Eat applesauce. Or soft peaches from a jar. You can't eat regular peaches. You're afraid you might hit that pit. You're like, yeah, teeth fall out. Even many with dentures, their gums are so weak, they still need to eat soft food. Now, the windows are the eyes, and they're going to fail. Enjoy what you can see now. The thing that distressed me so much was when my eyesight began to deteriorate, because I took pride in my eyesight as young. My eyesight was 20/15, actually 20/10 as a kid. I could see a sign 5 miles away. I could see it and read it at 4. That's why my dad used to love me to ride with him, because I'd never miss the exit with Harley in the car, because he could see the sign before I even knew it was there. I said, is there a sign? I said, your exit's coming up. I don't even know where the street is. I said, it's way over there. Like that Israeli pilot that said that he could see, I think it was 17 miles. Away, he could see a target 17 miles in his cockpit. Call him Eagle or Hawkeye. 17 miles. That's incredible to have that kind of vision. You're flying since there's a formation of MiGs coming up. They're not even on our radar. How do you see it? You better follow me. Get some of these kills in here. Verse 4, and the doors shall be shut in the streets when the sound of the grinding is low, and he shall rise up at the voice of the bird, and the daughters of music shall be brought low. The doors may either refer to the mouth sinking in or the ears. Okay. It wouldn't talk about the teeth, the mouth just starts sinking in. You ever see old folk when the mouth sink in? You'll join them. I think it might be the ears that can barely hear. The sound of a little bird will cause an old man or woman to have a sleepless night, while the desire to listen to music diminishes. You don't want to hear nothing. You get older, you'd be surprised how your hearing increases. You just start hearing better. That's like a sign that you're on your way down. You start hearing stuff. Just start hearing things. Did you hear that? What? It sounds like a so-and-so. No one can hear that but you and you and your dog ears. One of the strange paradoxes of old age when it comes to hearing is that you have to speak so loud to the older man or woman to hear you oftentimes, and yet the sound of a little bird will cause them to have restless nights. They're like deaf in one sense, and then another sense they hear so plainly, too plainly. That's a strange paradox. What? 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 And little old bird, I can't, do you hear that, honey? I can't go to sleep. That stupid bird will kill him. Also, verse 5, when they shall be afraid of that which is high, and fear shall be in the way, and the almond tree shall flourish, and the grasshopper shall be a burden, and desire shall fail, because man goeth to his long home, and the mourners go about the streets. So here's something else you got to look forward to. Fear of heights. Fear during walking. Fear of falling down. The one thing, if I had a particular fear, and I think a lot of older folks would tell you, if you really asked them, was the fear of falling down. Because depending upon how old they are, they know if something is broken, the odds of it recovering to the state it was before is very rare, if at all. It's falling down and not being able to get up. Fear of heights. Afraid of anything high. Afraid of walking. Fear of falling down, not knowing what is along the road. Trouble the elderly. Sure does. The almond tree speaks of the hair turning white. It's going to go white. The grasshopper may either refer to bent and crippled legs, impairing mobility, or the smallest of things of life slow you down. The grasshopper reminds you of the mobility that you once had during your youth, and now the thought of that fact burdens you and drags you down. The appetites diminish, as well as the desires are gone for the things that we craved and lived for in our youth. Why? Because death is approaching. There is nothing you can do about it. When you are buried in the grave and you go to your eternal home and the other mourners that are soon to be buried are finished mourning your past and they go about their business, they'll join you in that dirt net. But now they're just going to keep going on like everything is fine for them. But they're going to join you. Don't worry about it. Verse 6, or ever the silver cord be loosed or the golden bowl be broken, or the pitcher be broken at the fountain, or the wheel broken at the cistern. Silver cord is the spinal cord. The golden bowl is the brain. The pitcher is the heart. The breaking of these bowls refer to death. That's it. Spinal injury, death. Brain injury, death. Heart injury, death. The wheel in the cistern speaks of that which sustains life, and that is also gone. And then you die too. It's broken. Verse 7, then shall the dust return to the earth as it was, and the spirit shall return unto God who gave it. Mm-hmm. The body seen as dust, and it is made of the particles of the earth, by the way, goes right back into the ground, and the spirit goes back to God who gave it. We are all accountable to God, and we will all give an account to him. What was his conclusion of life? What was his conclusion of life for those who refuse to remember their creator? Same way he started out. Vanity of vanity, said the preacher, all is vanity. So he ends the book the same way he began. Life stinks without God. Still stinks. It stunk before he wrote it, and it stunk when he was finished. Because it's nothing but a wasted life without God. And moreover, verse 9, the preacher, because the preacher was wise, he still taught the people knowledge. Yea, he gave good heed and sought out and set in order many proverbs. The preacher sought to find out acceptable words, and that which was written was upright, even words of truth. So the wise teacher sought for simple truth to give to his hearers, the words of truth to be precise. So all wise teachers give people the plain, simple truth they can understand. The words of the wise are as goads and as nails fastened by the masses of assemblies, which are given from one shepherd. In other words, Solomon's truths are firm and stable. His teachings are sure. The words of truth come from the one true shepherd, that's God himself. And further by these, my son, be admonished, be warned. Of making many books, there is no end, and much study is a weariness of the flesh. He said, don't weary yourselves trying to find answers to life apart from the truth of God's word. Everyone's writing books now. I mean, everyone's writing a book that shouldn't even be reading, let alone writing a book. Trying to find answers of life apart from God is nothing but vain, because there is no truth about mankind that cannot be answered from God's word. There's nothing about any one of us and every one of us and every person that cannot be answered by the Bible. He made us, and he knows us, and has given us the simple truth that multitudes of books cannot ever even begin to touch. So what is the truth? Here is a simple conclusion of this whole thing. Let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God, keep his commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. How simple is that? Fear God. From the beginning to the end, he says, let's just get to the conclusion of what really matters. Fear God, keep his commandments. For this is the whole duty of man. I can imagine his listeners were sitting at the edge of their seats waiting for this great conclusion. Let's hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Okay, what is it? Fear God, huh? Keep his commandments. What? That's it? That's it. Fear God, which Solomon said in Proverbs, is the beginning of knowledge and wisdom, which is the Old Testament definition of salvation. Number two, keep his commandments. This is the result of fearing God, not an afterthought or supplement. And number three, for this is the whole duty of man. In other words, this truth applies to every person. Every person is to do this. The word duty is not in the Hebrew text. The way it should be stated is, this is the whole of man. In other words, this is who a man who is whole with his creator and with the proper understanding of life. If a man is whole with his creator, he understands that fearing God and keeping the commandments is why he was created in the first place. If you want to be whole or find yourself implying a purpose for being, that's what it is. I want to find myself. When they're honest, they just want to sin. But to try to find yourself is just a neat way of saying, I want to find my purpose in life. Well, it's only seen in fearing God and obeying his word. This is how you are made whole and complete. This is how you find yourself. You will live for the purpose of why God created you and not for yourself. Why? Again, for God shall bring every work into judgment with every secret thing, whether it be good or whether it be evil. All man stands or will stand before the God who made them and give an account for all that is done, whether it is known or secret, and God will judge it all. Nothing that anyone can do is going to escape the scrutiny of God. Phil Kagi said, life at best is very brief, like the falling of a leaf, like the binding of a sheath. Be in time, fleeting days are telling fast. that the die will soon be cast and the fatal line be passed, be in time. Fairest flowers soon decay, youth and beauty pass away. Oh, you have not long to stay, be in time. While God's Spirit bids you come, sinners do not longer roam, lest you seal your hopeless doom. Be in time, won't you be in time? Lord, I want to live for you, give all I can give for you. Help me, Jesus, to make the most of my time. Fleeting days are telling fast, that the die will soon be cast and the fatal line be passed. Be in time, Lord, help me to be in time. Let's pray. Lord, again, a wonderful conclusion of Ecclesiastes, a wonderful time of study in this, well, depressing but true book, Lord, true account of life lived under the sun. And may we rejoice in that we were privileged to be able to go through this book to learn many, many truths, Lord, which I hope will cause us to do some serious thinking about life under the sun, that we don't need to live like folks under the sun, to see their pitiful condition the way it really is, to see how blessed we are as believers. Thank you again for this time. Bless the giving in Jesus' name. Amen.